Hey everybody, it's Mary Lou Tyler. This week's guest is all about trust. Trust, high performance, teamwork, and I'm very happy to have Jason Treu, pronounced Treu, but it's T-R-E-U. For those of you who want to look him up, Jason T-R-E-U. It's pronounced Treu. He's an executive coach, works with teams to really get our teams at high performance, great communicators, and most importantly, build this trust that's necessary. Now, all of you know, top of funnel where we work, we have a real issue with keeping people engaged and keeping teams together and high performing. So Jason is all about that. And today we're going to talk about, you know, the work that he does and some things for you to consider as you're putting together these teams for business development in creating a high-performance, highly interactive, highly engaged team. Welcome, Jason, to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show and speaking to your fantastic tribe.
So let's figure this out. Where do we begin? What are the biggest issues that you see in general? Now, again, if we can focus on top of funnel, because that's where my teams are, is the sales executives that are working on business development. What are you seeing as some of the biggest issues that if you're listening to this podcast, you want to be able to isolate, you know, what are those top issues that I'm dealing with and how do I resolve them? So let's start with, what are the top issues that you're seeing in the industry today?
Well, I mean, I think bottom line is people are just not performing as high as they could be. That's one issue. I mean, underperformance is pretty rampant. I would also say that few people are working at their highest level, right? Gartner had a stat that, and it's self-reporting, only 16% of employees said they were putting forth their maximum daily effort, right? I would say then the other part is obviously employee retention, right? I mean, people are leaving jobs all the time and it costs anywhere from 100 to 300% to, you know, replace those individuals. And then also, I think you see a lack of trust going on from the customer side of the issue as well, right? I mean, people are just don't trust working with individuals and organizations today, probably more than ever, right? So that all hurts your model and how you're working with those individuals external to your organization. And the other part of it, I'd say the fifth one really is agile teams, and meaning that today teams are having to be thrown together and put together on the fly, right? Not a lot of teams are together for a long period of time. And so unless you build a significant amount of trust and caring and connection and belonging, you can't ever reach the ability to have them operate at their highest level together, right? And that's where the magic begins. So when you start to take a look at all of those issues, they're pretty significant, because the teams and the organizations that can master that can compete on a significantly larger playing field and, in end of the day, beat organizations and lead them that are 5, 10, 15, 20 times bigger than you are, because they won't have that, right? And they're working at such a low level that you can outflank them, and people will want to work with you so much more because the relationship they have with you is so radically different, not only than they do against the competition, but really anyone they've ever worked for.
So in your experience, is this a hiring issue to begin with, or are you comfortable that you can work with teams that have been, like you say, bootstrapped together, don't necessarily have the skill set within the organization that they've been put into at this point in time? Or is it is hiring the issue, or can you take any type of hodgepodge team and create a cohesive, trust-driven team out of this kind of band of misfits, if you will?
Yeah.
You know, where does that lie along that spectrum?
Well, that's an excellent question. I mean, I think that's an excellent question, because I think on the hiring side of things, I think the challenge begins with, you've got to ask more team dynamic questions. And I would say to you, more questions that get at people's character, values, and, you know, communication and collaboration than what most people ask. Because end of the day, when you look at poor hiring, right, the biggest hire you'll ever have a problem with is, and I have these in clients, and they're extremely difficult to get rid of, is extremely high performers who don't buy in the vision and values and go off the reservation. Because the fear is, how could I have someone who's crushing it? How could I ever fire them?
Right.
But because you didn't do a good enough job of really on the front end examining who they are as a person, you just let them in. And now they're cancer in the organization, but how do you get rid of your number one salesperson? Right? And the other point, how do you keep them? Because it's killing the rest of the organization. So I do think on the hiring side of things, you do have to start asking a different set of questions. And the reason that questions like that work as well is that if you ask a question like, what's your greatest strength? Like, what everyone listening to this has had that someone ask a question. Well, you're on autopilot and robot mode, right? You can answer that question, right? But if you ask someone a question like, so tell me about the worst team you've ever been on and how did you handle it and what did you do to try to engage people and people motivated or just work with them so your performance wouldn't fall off, right? Well, they've never been asked that type of question, right, before. So that helps you start to evaluate it. But on the other side of it, on the flip side of it, they've done tons of studies, right, where they've looked at all-star teams versus hiring just B players. And they found that B players often will outperform all-star teams. In fact, most of the times they will, because people who are all-stars have a hard time working and coordinating together. And they also did another research study for doctors where they put an all-star team of doctors together in cities to do operations. And they compared that against a doctor who went from hospital to hospital and brought their core team that they were working with that weren't all-stars. And they found that the teams that traveled together and worked in other hospitals and other settings outperformed all-star doctor teams and people significantly in the amount of patient mistakes and other things that went on, right?
So
the more important thing is, what do you do with the team right now to build extremely high levels of trust with them? And how do you do that in order to get the things that are necessary? And the reason that trust works is the precursor for everything that we do, right? I mean, the bottom line is, in your head personally, it goes off and says, how much do I trust that person, right? On a scale of 1 to 10, because that's who you share your most intimate details with, right? The people that are your best friends, family, partner, whatever. You don't go to Starbucks and just walk in line with someone and tell some complete stranger. Well, I guess maybe someone does that, but probably almost no one else, 99.9% of us wouldn't do that. And so that's really the first thing that you have to do in these organizations, is to be able to skyrocket trust in minutes with people. Because the problem is, most teams, and the data shows that it will take you somewhere between 200 to 400 hours to form a very close working relationship with someone, right? And because of the time that's necessary, because most people follow the path that I'll be vulnerable and share with you only after I trust you,
right?
Which is an extremely slow process, right? Because I have to get to know you. There's a time element. Well, again, we really don't have that in today's world. If you go back and roll the clock in the 60s, yeah, you did that because most people worked in a place 20, 30, 40 years. But if you don't have years to warm someone up and have that leeway. You now have to do that instantly. And if you don't, you're underperforming from the get-go. So B players are just as effective as all-stars if you add in the trust element, and even actually probably more so, because there's a lot less issue going on in terms of, I'm right, I'm really good, and I've got to get someone to bend other people.
Wow. You know, this, my head's spinning, because there's a mindset in our industry that you leave the all-stars alone. You leave the outliers alone. They're performers. We don't know how they do it. They're not necessarily nice people, but they get the job done and they're contributing to revenue. This is a big mindset change for leaders saying, wow, B players, can I really make them into a cohesive, high-performing team? So if I have a band, I have my one outlier, my two outliers, and the rest, the 80%, are the B players. Where do we start in developing the skill set or mindset to have this trust that you're talking about? Are there exercises that you work with clients on?
There are. And the one thing that I look at is that you have to start off with a trust building process, because I know we were talking about this before the phone call, is that when there's a communication problem between people, because this happens in a lot of organizations, like I'm working with a large oil and gas organization and they have other divisions and the company's doing very well, but other divisions are talking to other people because they don't trust them and they don't want to let secrets out. And so they're all little pockets for the most part.
Right.
And the problem with that is that there's a lot of knowledge transfer people are missing, right? And best practices and help that they aren't leveraging, which means that they're underperforming what they could be doing if they actually got together with people and had people to call up when they had a problem or issue or they were unsure to do. They could bounce things off and start to ask people and get to know people throughout the entire organization, right? So that may look like a communication and collaboration and teamwork problem, and it is, but we don't know until we build enough trust, does the problem solve itself? Because a lot of times if you do this, people just start communicating and collaborating, right? You don't even need to do that work. So it's like the horse before the cart, right? Because a lot of times in your life, you don't have to tell everyone. If you solve the root problem, now we're not looking at the leaf on the tree, right? It's not a hiring problem anymore if we solve it when the onboarding, and I'll tell you what to do because I've tried about everything and looked at it. End of the day, what starts to happen with trust is that what's game-changing about it is vulnerability. Because when you can get people to be vulnerable with other people, you then can rock a trust. And we've all done this because we've all met someone within 5 or 10 minutes, right? And felt like we've either known them our entire lives or known them really well, right?
Right.
And what happened is someone was vulnerable and shared something, whatever that was, right? May have went where they lived, their experience. I don't know. And the other person related. And what happened is, You stair step up vulnerability and rocketed, right? And you did in that one conversation what most people do 20 or 30 times. The problem is we're not doing it all the time. And it's more haphazard than it's anything else. So if you take that as an example, and when I ask people at the most vulnerable times in their lives, it's always with a conversation and words, right? If you if the person that you cared about the most, if you could never tell them I love you, they would never know.
Right.
If you went to a wedding, you could never say I do. It wouldn't matter that you did the wedding, right? The words solidify the relationship. And
exactly.
I know it sounds silly, but people do all these other exercises and activities to try to build teams. At the end of the day, it's just a waste of time. Because what you need to do is to get people to know your experience, your emotions, and relate to you deeply, right? And understand that quickly. And the only way you do that is by asking questions. And what I found is even more powerful than you can do it one-on-one, and it can work really well. But the most powerful way to do it in organizations with a team. Because if you do it with a team, you can relate to a few people. Let's say you have 5 people, like we talked about before. If you have 5 people and you're sitting in that group, right, and there are 4 other people in front of you, to create a strong group environment, I don't need to connect with every person in that team, right? Those 4 people. Or let's even say there's several groups of people, right? You don't have to participate. What you need to do with those 4 other people is connect to probably 2 of them in a way that's either through an experience. Like if I ask you, tell me about the most important lesson you've learned. Who's your personal hero? Tell me about the biggest setback you've had in the last 5 years and how you dealt with it, right? Tell me about, you know, some time when your heart was broken. And you just have to relate to either experience or the emotion. We'd probably half the people or less. And you start to feel this connection in safety with the people that you're at. And it's called belonging cues. And neurologically, biologically, and chemically now, you feel safe, right? And they call this psychological safety. And when you feel like that, what starts to happen is those people in your group, right, let's just pretend that they're the first time you ever met them. You will put them in your inner circle, psychologically as you will, because those people now know when you ask questions like that and ask probably several more, more information than even the people that are the closest in your life know, right? And and that anyone else on the planet knows. So even though the time element isn't there, the feeling that they know you is there, and they have that information and you know them. So then what happens is you're more open to them, and then you can take the time element of what would take 200 hours and do that significantly faster, right? And literally probably hours where you can feel the same way with those people. And especially if you're with them 6 months or a year, you can speed up that process pretty radically in order to feel extreme closeness towards them and this tight bonding, where then you can be at that performance level that you need. And I'll say the last thing is, there is a research study by Professor Arthur Aaron, who did it back in 1997, which was the thing that really made me open up my eyes to this. And he was trying to create close relationships with people in 45 minutes. And he had complete strangers ask questions, and this was just paired, right? They didn't know each other, as 36 vulnerable questions over 45 minutes. And what was up crazy was at the end, they surveyed pre and post, and what they found out was 30% of the people created the closest relationship in their life in 45 minutes. And they've replicated the study dozens and dozens of times over the years since that time. Mm-hmm. So in every environment, with every age group, in every geography, right? So it didn't matter where it was. And I found that out myself by trying to do this. And so that's really where the magic starts and ends. And it's quick. It's not hard. And there's pretty radical results going on because of it.
Wow. So, you know, this is great for teams. My mind is again spinning about in business development. When we're doing net new clients and working with new clients, we're looking at trying to build that rapport, and we're on that first conversation. It's not 45 minutes. It's maybe three or four, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, in that space of time, do you think it's possible for us to establish rapport in that small window of time with people we don't know?
Sure, because what you do, when I tell people they only have a couple minutes, I ask them to ask uplifting questions and that dig into people that make them talk about gratifying things or things they're proud of or things that are meaningful to them, so you can understand what's going on and open the door to have more conversations. And questions are like, so what are you most excited about in your life right now? Who's your personal hero? What are you most grateful for, right? What's your greatest achievement that you've had? Or even a question like, so tell me, like, what's the most important lesson you've learned over the last year, right? And you can even say someone like, yeah, I want to ask you a couple questions to get to you, understand you more as a person. And here's some questions that I got, I actually saw from a game, and I just like to ask you them. Would that be okay? And we'll always say yes, because when you say it's like a game, and I've created one, and you can, everyone wants to, because they're like, oh, a game, I want to play, right? So it's also for fun.
Yeah.
And it opens the door, because the fear of missing out is so high in today's world, and people can't say no. And if they would say no, you know you're in trouble, because then you know your relationship is really tenuous, right? Where they really don't want to talk to you about something, and it's more transaction driven. But I mean, I haven't had that happen, but I guess it's possible, right? But then when you do, you can get to know them. And over time, you can ask other questions, right? And you can start to realize that understanding the things that they value in their experiences and getting to know them is particularly important. And then you can relate to them and make little comments, but it's more important for them to share with you, because they'll feel a lot closer to you, right?
Right.
And obviously, you don't want to make it be an interview, but you want to get them talking more so you understand what's going on. Because then you can start to ask questions like, so what are your pet peeves? Like, how do you best like to communicate with individuals, right? In this engagement, I want to know, like, what would be the best way for me to work with you and send you stuff to you, like phone calls, text, emails, or, you know, because a lot of the things that go on, I find, is not that, you know, both sides of it don't want to do great work. They just operate differently. And you don't ask enough questions to understand that. And you think the way that you're, you know, you send long emails to people. Well, there's a lot of people who only want an email with three sentences in them. Talk to them, right? And you do more than that, they get annoyed. And they get annoyed because you haven't figured that out. And obviously, there's no way for the people listening to this to like magically wake up and figure that out except by asking. So you have to start to get to know people in a deep way and start to ask these questions, right? Especially, you know, over time. You can't ask them all up front, right? But you have to start building the rapport and building that deep trust initially so they're more willing to do that. And why is that important? Well, because think about it this way. If you get mad at someone you really care about, there's a lot more leeway. They're willing to let things go and forgive it. Why? Because their relationship is more important than the argument. And when you start off with someone who doesn't know you, that's not true. So it's in your best interest to do that because you can test more things. They're more willing to take leaps of faith, right? And so the requirement is if I can build higher trust with you, right? Then all this stuff goes better. And everyone listening to this, think about the best client engagement you've had. Think about the best team that you've been on. And think about how you felt. Think about what you could do. Think about all those results. And if you think about it another way, think about if you could replicate that experience over every team you're on and every client you're with, think that what that would do to your business and your career.
Just be pretty magical. Game changer, 100%. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, wow, the folks that are listening to this call, we talk about over and over and over again, humanizing the sales conversation. Yes. We can leverage technology. We can do as much as we can. But at the end of the day, it's that belly to belly, even though it could be virtual over the phone. It's that conversation that gives you that wealth of information and that rapport and trust. And you have it here in this. Now let's talk about your book, Social Wealth. So tell me about what got you interested in that, and putting this out there is great, I think, for people. So for those listening, Social Wealth is the name of Jason Troy's book. And I think for us in business development, this is a must-have resource for us to be able to read, understand, and start, you know, we apply everything, Jason. When we read something, we apply what we're learning in that sales conversation. And I think that, you know, this type of book is all about building, I think you said, what, extraordinary relationships. Yeah. And that's really what we're trying to do, is transform that conversation in that first call where we only have a finite period of time to start building that rapport. So tell us about the book.
Well, I started to write this book because obviously all my clients want to build great relationships for some reason, right? And when I was looking at all the rest of the books, there were books by like Keith Ferrazzi at the time, Never Eat Alone, and a lot of great books. But the problem is they were filled with stories and they weren't really a blueprint. And so I thought to myself, if I get rid of the stories and I give you a blueprint, or it's 90% content, right, inside of there that you can use and a way that you can reference it chapter by chapter, you can go back and start to leverage this and understand how it can start to work for you and where to go to meet people, right? Mm-hmm. Both personally and professionally at the same time. And then, you know, things on how to go to a conference and how to leverage that as well, right? Because there's a lot that you can do, like inside of a conference. Like, for instance, one of the things that I do with people on my own clients, which surprisingly almost no one does every single time, is if you contact the speakers ahead of time, or if you get a list of the people and contact them for meetings, like you'd be amazed at how many meetings you get because people never contact them. And I know it seems like hard. And if you use this like in, you know, hunter.io, you can actually get all the email aliases and contact people.
Yes.
And most people are pretty open to meetings because they want to be more successful and get more out of these. And no one does it, right? And so I typically will go and have people do this. I had one of my clients went to a real estate conference and got a significant amount of funding meeting with people just by sending out emails.
Right.
And if you start to figure out things like that, and then start communicating with them in these conversations, being much more vulnerable and getting to know them, you can really change the game on what's going on, right? And when you do those things, you lead with giving, essentially. Right. And what happens is when you lead with giving, and giving is just, giving can be listening, right? Because mm-hmm. it's what the people in your inner circle do. And when you can start to mimic that and do those same things with acquaintances, the human brain does not know the difference between reality and fantasy, right? Okay. Meaning that the people that you've known for 20 years or for 5 minutes, it can't tell the difference. That's why when you met someone in 5 minutes and felt like you've known them forever, your brain doesn't know the difference.
Right.
So you feel the same way. So what you do is you have to act the same, and then those things can really be sped up. And so throughout the book, I try to help people get through a process where they can create familiarity with people and create an open, safe dialogue where people care about them and they care about other people. And then that creates more of a contribution mindset, right? Where you're less attached about what are you getting and more about helping other people, enrolling people in your success and their success, and doing it in a way that sets up more of a win-win situation, right? For the most part. I mean, you know, there's always going to be challenges, mm-hmm. but you're going to be able to do that much more than other people will. And you'll stand out because you'll be doing significantly different things. And when you're dealing with a lot of the people that people here are dealing with, they're getting phone calls all the time. If you're in a room like that and you stand out from differently than the other 99% of the people, how can you not help but being successful, right? Because those people want to do business with you, right? If you ask them on a question early on, I'd love to get to know you more. Like, who, you know, what is it that you care about, right? Now, you wouldn't ask that question, but you'd ask other questions like that. Well, then they're thinking the only people would ever ask me like that are the people that really care about me, because why else would they do it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what could their agenda be? Well, then that person's like, well, wouldn't it be great to go work with that person or at least explore it more? And then the other sales skills and other things come into play, right?
Right.
Before then, you don't even have that opportunity, because again, the first question someone's asking themselves all the time is, do I trust you or do I not? And that's, that is the gate. That's the gatekeeper question in the back of our subconscious mind. And you have to get by that person. And if you don't, you won't be successful, or it'd be really, it's going to be really difficult to do that, right? And great salespeople do this in another way, right? I've spoken to them and asked them about some of the things I'm doing, and they do it in another way, but it's unique to them. So mm-hmm. it's hard for them to share it with other people because it's part of who they are, not the technique that they're using. Right. And so that's where the challenge comes in building trust with people.
And that's exactly why, though, they're outliers. They can't be cloned. You cannot build a process around them. You can't build a series of skill sets around them. But for these other 80 to 85 to 90% of the people in sales who you want to be high producers, there is a process, a method, a series of teachings that they can learn in order to become more productive in whatever job that they're looking for. So that's where your work is just wonderful for the folks that are in that bucket of the 80%, which is most of us anyway.
It is.
So,
And that's the thing that's great about it, right? I mean, I think that, mm-hmm. right, it's like in doing a team exercise, because the other thing that starts to happen too is you start to talk to people who are really good salespeople. They'll walk in the door, right? And they'll pick up the phone, right? And they'll start calling people. And because they look at it as saying, I don't care if 30 say no, if one say yes. Mm-hmm. But other people don't. And so by doing other activities, such as getting in a sales huddle and asking three things that you're grateful for, can cause a state change when you look at abundance at the world, right? All of other people do something where they're bringing a photo of the people or that they love the most or some experience and giving them 30 seconds to a minute in a group and just sharing it, right?
Right.
Well, that makes everyone feel good and to get to know each other, right? Or you can do something like text someone else in the organization, or just share in the group how someone helped you and thank them for it, right?
Right.
And what impact it made. Well, when you start doing that, the first thing that you do it will change how you approach the phone and your engagement because your mind is changed, and it can take a minute a person, and that's all you need to do, right? And there's so much research, right, behind all this stuff and people doing it, and I see the difference in it, that I think people just need to take a little bit of time and realize that when people come in or do stuff, right, even if you have a remote team, you can do all this stuff too. It really doesn't matter.
Right.
But you've got to help people along on this journey, and then they will shine and come out. Because my belief is, and I've seen this happen, is that B players can crush it as much as all-stars can and even do a better job. They just need a little bit more help to get there and to show them the inside of what does it look like to be operating the top 1%? What does it feel like? What does it look like? And then people can find their way. You just have to give them a little popcorn trail, and then they'll be able to flourish on their own because they're like, oh, that's what it feels like. That's how it is, right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they just don't know. And then, Right. Like you said before, in the outliers, they do, but their brain works so much differently that when they try to communicate it to other people, it gets lost in translation, and those people actually then feel more confused when they're trying to be explained it, and they feel like, I just don't get it. I'll never be good at this, right? But then that's the worst thing you can do.
The downward spiral. They feel defeated. They feel like I can never measure up. And this is managers and leaders who are listening to this phone call. This is the issue. We can't necessarily clone the outliers and make everyone else be like them. We have to create a series and just a way of learning and teaching for the B folks to be able to perform at optimum. And it's right here. It's right here in Jason Troy's book. So to finish up here, let's talk about how people can get a hold of you, what we can do to start working on getting our teams at high performance. Where's the best way we can engage with you to do that?
Sure. You can go to my website, and that's jasontreu.com. And I have my team building game. It's a free one called Cards Against Mundanity. And I also have just come out with a...
I love that.
I just come out with a actual physical poker style cards that are brand new that I've tested that for selling for purchase. And I do this for a workshop and then other coaching for people. So you can just go there and just get all the details on it. And, you know, you can use the PDF free version of the other one. There's instructions to use. And I just want people to get out there and use these things and start to understand it, because teamwork is the most important soft skill out there, period. Because a team is not just necessarily the internal team. The team is the relationship you have with outside entities such as customers, prospects, partners, right?
Right.
And if you don't understand how to do that from A to Z, you're putting both hands behind your back. And it's the least understood out of all the soft skills by far, because people just think that it's just magic and that people understand how to do it, right? I'd even say it's actually more important than self-awareness, because although self-awareness is really low, at least that's a conversation people are having. Teamwork is one we're having that's much farther down the pike. We're looking really at the leaves, and no one's really looking at the root. And that becomes a massive problem. And the people you're talking to would get significantly higher results pretty much almost overnight. And they would see it if they started to indoctrinate this more and more inside of their organization. And it's not that expensive either, right? And a lot of this stuff is essentially free, right? I mean, it's not, you don't take people off site and do expensive things. In fact, really, it's like if you do a trust fall or something, all that is spending money to do an activity to have a conversation. Why not just have a conversation to begin with, and then you don't need the activity.
Right, right. But I think this is a nice tool. I think a lot of it is, it feels like there's no process or method behind it. So it's like either you have it or you don't. And I think what you're sharing with us today is that there is a process, there's a method, there's a series of exercises one can do, and you don't necessarily have to be inherently capable. That's the biggest lesson I'm learning today from you is that, you know, we have a business development team. We have 8 people on it. one guy is the outlier, but the other seven, they're all coachable, trainable. We can get them to be high performers. Don't give up on them. But we need to have a series of, or a method of being able to get people comfortable and trying these things in a setting that is safe. And that way they can be their true self, but yet excel in the role. And I think that is the biggest gift that you give to your audience, Jason, is the ability to know that, you know, I can achieve what I want to do in my career, but I need some tools to do that. And you have some of those tools that are vital to the success of a business development team.
Yeah, because if you're a manager and you have extreme trust with people, which is very high levels, your employees will be 8 times more engaged, right? Which leads to significantly higher performance. But you have to have a very high level of trust. And that's what people misunderstood. There's a recent study that just came out, and the people on a scale of like 1 to 5, like on a Likert scale, if they rated it as 3 or 4, meaning that, you know, 5 would be extreme trust and 1 would be no. If they rated you a 3 or 4, right, would be just having trust or slightly above average trust. It's the same thing as having distrust. If you have to score a 5, if you do not score a 5 on the trust scale, it doesn't matter. Your team is not operating at the level that it could be operating at. And I think that's pretty eye-opening of what you have to do in order to make all this happen. And again, right, when we get into more of the data and research, we really dig in and see this stuff is extremely important, and it's something that we overlooked, and that's why conversations like these are important. And there's a lot of roads to get there, but you've just got to start somewhere. And you have to have a plan, a people strategy, and a structure to do this, which isn't that hard or time-consuming, but you have to have it in place, because otherwise you're just not getting those people. Because part of the other thing that starts to happen, too, is that people then, when they leave the office at 6 or 7 o'clock, they're going to go home and listen to podcasts. They're going to read more. Why? Because they care more and they want everyone to be successful and they care about their manager's success, right? And they don't want to disappoint other people.
Right.
At extraordinary levels. So it's not just what they're doing at work, right? And they'll work a lot harder too, because they want not only themselves, but everyone else successful. And when you get in a contribution mindset, you now are more willing to take leaps of faith, right? And you're doing crazy stuff, like when mothers lift up cars to save their kids. Well, when you start getting more of that in head, again, it's completely game changing on the results that happen inside of the team, right? And it's all possible, except before, we've all been on teams where you've accomplished amazing things, either personally or professionally, that we never thought were possible. Well, the problem is we need to replicate that.
Exactly. This has been a wonderful conversation. I hope those listeners really take to heart that the success of our business development teams is people, process, and technology. But the people component is where we struggle the most. The ability to retain the team, the ability to be able to reach out to customers and prospects and be authentic and be able to have those conversations. This is the foundation to be able to build that within your teams. Jason, thank you so much for your time today. I very much appreciate it. I'll be sure to put all the links for everybody in the page for the podcast, his book, contact information. I really suggest that you contact him to work with the teams that you have in place right now, especially if you're struggling and not meeting your numbers, or even if you're to the point where you're a status quo and want to take it to that next level. He's a perfect person to be able to take those teams and grow the team internally so that they're the high performance team that you're hoping for. Jason, thanks again for your time.
Thank you for having me on the show.